This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Steve Gilbert and Rachel Schaefer. Steve is an affiliate professor and Rachel is a PhD student in the Department of Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences at the University of Washington School of Public Health. Steve is also director and founder of the Institute of Neurotoxicology and Neurological Disorders in Seattle and author of the book, A Small Dose of Toxicology. Steve and Rachel are here today to tell us about the dangers of lead exposure for workers and the role of workplace lead standards in worker protection. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Would you remind us of the health effects of lead?
Lead is actually one of the most well-studied compounds, and the scientific and medical communities now know that there's no safe level of lead exposure. Children are particularly vulnerable to lead because their bodies are still developing, and we're especially concerned about their nervous system, as even low levels of lead can lead to IQ deficits.
Also, exposure issues. Children absorb more lead than adults do. They'll absorb about 50% of the lead they ingest, whereas adults only absorb about 10%. So it's really important to recognize kids are more vulnerable, but this extends into the workplace. So you have a 16-year-old that's exposed to lead, his bones are still developing, he's going to absorb more lead. The same with somebody that's pregnant. If a woman that's pregnant will absorb more lead because the child needs more calcium and lead substitutes for calcium. So on many levels, we have vulnerable populations, vulnerable individuals that are exposed to lead.
And even among seemingly healthy workers in the workplace, low levels of lead over the long term can lead to high blood pressure, decreased kidney function, reproductive effects, and neurological impairment. So we're concerned about lead among children, but also among working adults.
I think the thing about lead is it robs you of your potential. It takes away from your neurological development. It really robs you of your potential in the future.
How does lead usually enter our bodies?
Lead usually comes through ingestion of lead, like lead dust. It can also be inhaled. But from a workplace standard, it's usually from lead dust or inhalation of lead.
The other exposure route that we're concerned about is lead can cross the placenta during pregnancy. So if a worker is exposed, their developing child might be exposed as well.
Would you say more about where lead ends up in our bodies when we are exposed?
Lead initially goes to bone because it substitutes for calcium. So it'll settle in the bone. So if you're growing and developing, your bones will take up that lead, and you can actually redistribute that lead as you get older. So lead goes there, it goes into the bloodstream, it gets in the nervous system. There is no biological function of lead. That's the other thing to remember. Lead causes disabilities that are difficult to pick up on an individual basis, but they are very evident on a population basis.
What are the main sources of lead exposure for workers?
We're mostly concerned about two general segments. One is manufacturing and the second is construction. With regard to construction exposures, we see a lot of lead exposure when workers are removing or renovating old structures or repainting bridges, for example. Historically, there was lead exposure when they were maintaining or installing lead pipes. And in general manufacturing, we see lead exposure with the production or repair of plumbing fixtures or battery recycling, lead bullets, fishing tackle, e-waste. So there's a lot of general industry exposures. Another industry of concern that we recently became aware of was the telecommunications workers. The cable lines are lined with or encapsulated with lead. And so that is another source of exposure.
So at this point in time, which sources of lead exposure for workers are of most concern?
I think it's mostly construction. It's lead paint abatement and removal is a big one, but recycling batteries is important. Firing ranges and bullets are really important, and fishing tackle. Lead is a really interesting compound. It's very heavy, so it's useful there. It has a low melting point, so it's easy to shape and use, and it shows up in a whole variety of products. For example, lead wheel weights, and you can collect them on the road and see lead wheel weights. People would recycle them and make their own fishing weights from the material they found on the road. So lead is really widely used in our society. And one other thing about lead-based paint is, you know, Europe banned lead-based paint in the 1920s. We did not ban lead-based paint until 1978. So there is a lot of potential for lead to be distributed into the environment. And in renovation, we expose our workers and families to lead.
To what extent are workers of color and immigrants exposed to lead in the workplace?
We see in King County that this is a particular problem. After a review of the number of elevated blood lead level cases among specific industries in our county, a disproportionate number of them seem to affect immigrants or minority populations, particularly with battery recycling and bridge painting. So this is definitely an environmental justice issue.
Roughly how many workers in the U.S. are exposed to lead at levels that could cause harm?
Well, nationally, OSHA estimates that over 1.5 million workers are potentially exposed to lead. So that doesn't mean they're necessarily exposed, but they're working in industries that might expose them to lead. About half of those are in general industry, half are in construction. But what's important to remember is that overall, among all adults that show elevated blood lead, over 94% of those are exposed through the workplace. So if we can eliminate workplace lead exposure, that will really go a long way for reducing elevated blood lead levels among the adult population.
Workers exposed to lead, he has a risk of taking that lead home to his family. And if there are kids there, the kids need a lot less lead and it'll raise their blood lead levels. So they will be elevated and have more damage to those kids when it will take home lead. So take home lead is a very big deal and it's very important to remember that. We don't want our workers just to be sentinels for lead out there. We want to reduce lead exposure and it helps protect their families.
The other issue with trying to quantify the number of workers potentially exposed is that any numbers we have are probably underestimations. Not all companies are monitoring or reporting these numbers, and so these are very rough estimates, and we can probably assume that there's more workers potentially exposed or exposed that we don't know about.
What are the numbers for Washington State workers in terms of lead exposure?
In King County, between 2010 and 2014, there were 570 reports of elevated blood lead levels, and those ranged from fairly low but elevated to extremely dangerously high. And as I mentioned earlier, a recent King County analysis of those numbers indicated that a disproportionate were minority or immigrant populations.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Steve Gilbert, affiliate professor, and Rachel Schaefer, PhD student in the Department of Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences at the University of Washington School of Public Health. Our topic is the dangers of lead exposure for workers and the role of workplace lead standards in worker protection. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. What workplace standards are in place to protect workers?
That is a long history to that, and to my view, they're very weak standards right now. For example, the Center for Disease Control set a level of 5 micrograms per deciliter for blood leads for children, but they've actually extended this to adults too. And right now, the standard for adults is on medical removal at 60 micrograms per deciliter. You can actually have a worker's blood leads go up to 60 micrograms per deciliter, and then they have to be automatically removed. But you can go from 40 to 60 and get some more indication that you've had excessive exposure and they might be removed. So it's up in that area. And then if the worker's blood leads drop down below 40, they can be returned to that workplace. So our view is that we really need to focus on repairing these standards, replacing them with something that is consistent with our scientific and medical evidence we have right now.
Just backing up to paint a little bit of the bigger picture. So federally, the Occupational Safety and Health Act covers federal workers. In Washington State, all non-federal workers are covered by the Washington Industrial Safety and Health Act, or WISHA. So in Washington, we have the ability to set different standards than the federal system does through OSHA, but we actually have the same occupational lead standards as the federal system. And as Steve mentioned, they allow that workers can stay on the job even when their blood lead levels are extremely high and they're at levels that we know to cause harm. The other key point about the existing standards is that they set an enforceable limit for the amount of lead you can be exposed to through the air, but that limit is not necessarily representative of a worker's lead exposure. They could be exposed to high levels of lead even if there are not high levels of lead in the air. So relying on air levels to trigger coverage by the standards is also inadequate.
How did these standards come to be, and why were the specific lead levels chosen? What's the history behind it?
The standards are based on information that was known in the 1970s, and we now know that much lower levels of lead exposure cause adverse health effects. And as Steve mentioned, CDC classifies anything above 5 micrograms per deciliter as elevated blood for adults and children. And again, workers are allowed to remain on their jobs until their blood leads reach 60. And that's just way too high based on what we know about the harmful effects of lead.
Yeah, I'd just like to point out another thing that's really interesting about Washington State is the Washington State Constitution says that the legislature shall pass necessary laws for the protection of persons working in mines, factories, and other employment dangerous to the health or deleterious to the health, and fix pains and penalties for the enforcement of the same. This is really unique, and most state constitutions do not call out workplace hazards. So Washington State's got an important role to play in setting a standard across the United States. If we would change our workplace standard, it would really set a new standard for the rest of the country. I just want to point that out. And then the NIOSH in 2015 designated 5 micrograms per deciliter as a reference level. So we are moving toward removing the distinction between adults and children, in which, my view, we need to do. Everybody has a right to be protected from lead exposure. And we know that lead is harmful at extremely low levels. And we should just make 5 as level of concern.
What protocols are businesses required to follow to protect workers from lead?
So businesses are required to comply with the existing standard to make sure that their workers have a safe workplace. They need to monitor air to ensure that lead concentrations do not exceed a certain level. They need to provide protective equipment for their workers if they're exposed to lead. If lead is in the workplace above a certain amount, they need to provide monitoring, and specifically medical monitoring of their workers. And they also need to provide medical removal, which means that if workers have a blood lead level above a certain amount, they can keep their pay and benefits and recover until their blood lead levels go back down.
So we really have to, I think, government, workplaces, employers, and the employees and a family, everybody needs to work together to help reduce lead exposure. And I think it's critical that the government monitor and be sufficiently well-funded to keep track of lead exposure in the workplace and enforce the standards. Business has to accept the notion that lead is harmful and work hard to provide workers with protective equipment and a job that's safe with reduced levels of lead, potential for lead exposure. And workers must be educated themselves, make sure they understand their rights to have work in a safe and healthy environment.
How well overall are businesses meeting regulations and protecting workers from lead?
It's hard to answer that question directly because the current standards are insufficient. They allow blood lead levels that we know to be dangerous. So even if companies were complying, it would not be good enough. But regardless, we're not sure how well companies are even complying with the current standards because there's not enough compliance monitoring of this. But the bottom line is workers have elevated blood lead levels from occupational exposures, and that needs to change. And to do that, we need to update the standard.
Would you say more about workers being monitored for lead? To what extent is this actually happening, and what do the data show?
Yeah, nationally, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health maintains the Adult Blood Lead and Epidemiology Surveillance Program, which is abbreviated as ABLES. And 41 states participate in this, and they monitor blood lead levels across the country. So we can get a pretty good sense of how blood lead levels are changing. And over time, we have seen decreases in blood lead levels, which means that workplaces are getting safer. But as I mentioned earlier, this is probably, again, an underestimate of the number of workers exposed because not all workers are being monitored for lead.
And this program was a voluntary program. It actually for the states. And the federal government lost funding for this for a couple of years. They've reinstated it now. But it just goes up and down as to how good the data is and how available the data is made from the states. So it's really important. Washington State has been pretty progressive about monitoring the blood leads, but we need to do a lot more in making sure that workers' blood leads are as low as possible.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Steve Gilbert, affiliate professor, and Rachel Schaefer, PhD student, in the Department of Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences at the University of Washington School of Public Health. Our topic is the dangers of lead exposure for workers and the role of workplace lead standards in worker protection. Well, there currently are efforts going on to change the acceptable lead levels for workers and the regulations for Washington State. Would you tell us about those efforts?
Yeah, thank you, Diane. That's a really great question because labor and industries has set in motion a rulemaking process to change the rules. It's a public process. They're having periodic meetings of stakeholders that are interested in these issues. I've been attending all the meetings because I'm very interested in lead and trying to reduce lead exposure, whether it's workers or kids. So the process will be that they've filed part of the legal requirements to make this happen, and they're hoping to have a draft of the new rules in January of this next year, 2017. So we're very hopeful that that's going to happen. They'll move forward fairly quickly on this. And we don't know what it's going to look like yet, but King County has also been very interested in this. King County has filed a letter that was some indication where they'd like to see. So I think I'm optimistic that something will happen in the next year. And the hope would be that in the fall of 2017, we'd have new regulation that would have better guidance for removal and workplace safety.
What are the specific changes that are being proposed?
I think the bottom line is that we need to update the standards that it reflects what we know about based on scientific evidence about the harmful levels of lead. So we need to keep blood lead levels down. Currently, workers can stay on the job until their blood leads are up to 60 micrograms per deciliter, and that's unacceptable. So we want stricter limits on worker blood lead levels, better monitoring and surveillance, lower levels of lead that are allowed to be in the air around workers, but also a different way that workers can be covered under the standard. Right now, the primary way that workers can be covered is if the air concentration around them has elevated lead, but workers can be exposed by other ways, not just if there's high levels of lead in the air. And so we need to expand coverage of the rule to include other what are known as trigger tasks. So if you're working with a substance that's known to contain lead, you should automatically be covered by the standard rather than waiting until the air concentrations become elevated.
You should remember if a worker is coming out with elevated blood leads, that means there's lead circulating in the environment. That lead's going to get out into the environment. They could be taking it home with them. So there's a lot of extra people that might be exposed to that lead. And my personal view is that anybody with a blood lead above 5 micrograms per deciliter, we should be looking to what happened there. How do we have good safety practices that will make sure that the blood lead does not get above 5? And in the future, I think we've got to have good, solid standards to help protect workers and their families.
In your view, how likely is it that the proposed changes will be made in the Washington State regulations?
I'm really optimistic it's going to happen this time. I think King County is very interested in something changing. And I think we have plenty of information about lead. Lead's a compound that we know a lot about. We don't need to study this issue anymore. We need action. We need to move forward and with new standards that are protective of workers and their families and not kick this can down the road one more time.
And as Steve mentioned earlier, worker protection is a key part of our state written into our Constitution. So this is an exciting opportunity for Washington to take the lead and become a model for other states about how to protect our workers from lead.
The other state that's been working hard on this issue is California, and we've been collaborating with them also. So I think there is some real interest in California and Washington State changing the rules. And we can legally do this because of our own state abilities with WSHA and DOSH, you know, our Department of Occupational Safety and Health, can set more strict standards than the federal government. So it's a really great opportunity for us to be leaders for the nation.
Where do the efforts in California to change the regulations currently stand?
They started a similar rulemaking process before we did, and so they're a little bit ahead of us. I think they're reviewing draft proposals at the moment, but no sign yet of a clear rule coming forward.
Yeah, California's been going on at least 5 years, and they got bogged down in procedure and process, and I'm hoping that will not occur in Washington State. We do have a clear path forward. I think there's a lot of interest in stakeholders are very interested in doing something. I think the workplace and the unions are interested in doing it. So I think we're going to be moving forward. We need people. We need people engaged in this issue. You know, if you have a strong feeling about this, you can write an opinion to the state, to labor industries. There's a website they have for that stuff. We need people knowledgeable and educated about this issue and want to have a good, safe workplace.
Well, you've alluded to this a bit already, but what would an ideal lead standard look like?
My view would be that there would be workplace removal. If your blood lead creeps above 5, then there's got to be something done. Maybe you've got to figure out why and how do we protect the worker and how do we remove the lead from the environment. So I think 5 is the magic number.
How well does OSHA protect workers from toxics overall, the federal agency?
OSHA has historically been underfunded and understaffed. They probably only visit about 1% of all workplaces each year. So they have lots of cover and aren't necessarily effective in ensuring compliance with their standard. That being said, we have seen that workplaces have gotten safer over the years. We have less hazardous exposures, less workplace fatalities, but I think we still have a long way to go.
Yeah, I think we've got to recognize that we need a safe workplace. We've all got to be working together to make sure this happens. I don't want to see the government and industry and labor battling it out because we've got to be working together. We know this stuff. It's not new news. There's no new news about lead. We've got all we need to know about lead and the hazards of working with it. If lead was causing cancer, it was cancer causing, we would not be having this discussion. It would already have been dealt with somehow. But the problem is lead causes very subtle damage, robs of your potential, so they can get away with just say, well, I didn't see any health effects of lead, where there are health effects. So I think it needs to change.
What could be done to make OSHA more effective?
I think a lot of it has to do with funding. I mean, there's got to be more recognition that we need good regulation, need good workplace. Why has the standard for lead been so painfully unchanged over the last, 40 years practically, 4 years from the 70s? We haven't changed that. So we need recognition that OSHA needs to have the authority and the will to make good regulations for the vast number of chemicals in the workplace, from benzenes to all kinds of solvents that are used in the workplace to other metals that are there, chromium, phthalates. There's lots of compounds that need regulation in the workplace. And we've got to pay more in taxes. We've got to fund these agencies adequately and respect our workers.
And in addition to that, we need OSHA to use larger fines against companies who have violated the standards. Right now, they often just use trivial fees, and that's not really an incentive for companies to comply with these standards. So that's another key change.
How well does our Washington State Labor and Industries protect workers from toxics?
I think that labor and industries does a pretty good job. But again, it's lack of funding, it's lack of inspectors to get out there, and like everybody's got to be working together to make our environment safe and healthy. We've got to think of the future generations. We've got to be working together because an adversarial environment doesn't help the workers, it doesn't help the industry, it doesn't help the government, it makes things more complicated. But I think we have a good set of laws. We've worked hard to improve them, educate people about them, you know, whether it's pesticide use. I think that one thing that would be really helpful would be simplifying the rules and regulation a little bit so that we are protecting everybody throughout the chain of the use of these chemicals.
What are the best steps the government can take to prevent workers from being exposed to lead?
I think the most important thing is to update the standard to reflect what we know about the adverse effects of lead and really make sure that no one has a blood lead level that's known to be dangerous if they're on the job, and to make sure that workers can be covered by the lead standard through a variety of mechanisms, not just if the air concentration is elevated.
I think one thing we've got now is we can measure blood leads a lot easier than in the past, much cheaper to do. We can look at lead in materials. We've got technology called XRF technology that lets you easily assess non-destructively a material's lead concentration. So we've got the tools and we've got the knowledge to do things differently. I think it's really important we change these standards and let the industry work with that and have the employers and employees work together to have a safer work environment.
What are the best steps that businesses can take to help prevent their workers being exposed to lead?
They need to follow what's outlined in the standard and hopefully what will be outlined in the new standard, including good ventilation systems, good cleaning policies, blood and air monitoring. Also, they need to provide a separate lunch area away from the working area so workers can eat without contaminating with lead. They need to provide their workers with adequate protective equipment and make sure that their lead safety training is in the appropriate language.
Yeah, I think my default is education. I think we need to educate workers more in the language. We need to spend more time doing that, and that's going to be part of the cost of doing business. And I think overall, we've all got to accept things are going to cost a little bit more to be done right and not externalize these costs on the future generation or onto the workplace, because we subsidize our cheap products with the health of workers, and we've got to stop doing that.
What steps can workers themselves take to prevent lead exposure?
I think the most important steps need to be taken by government and by business, but workers can do some certain small actions to protect themselves, including washing their hands before eating and drinking, and eating and drinking away from where they're working with lead, using their protective equipment correctly. And I think to get back to what Steve mentioned earlier, workers need to change out of their clothes and make sure they wash off before returning home, because take-home lead exposure is a real concern in the occupational setting where workers are exposed during the day, they come home at night, bring that lead to their families, and could potentially harm their children. So that's a really important step that needs to be taken by workers.
And it's really important for all of us to wash our hands more often. My granddaughters come into my house, first thing they have to do is wash their hands. Mm-hmm. Wash your hands, whether it's lead or it's a pesticide or something else you've been exposed to. Really important to have good personal hygiene.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
You know, for me, that big message is we all need to be working together to have not just a good, safe work environment, but a good, safe environment in general, so we're not increasing the exposure to these chemicals and we're not taking these chemicals home to our families. We all need to work together to protect ourselves and our families from exposure to workplace hazards.
We know a lot about lead. Lead has been studied for decades, and so this is a situation where we can act on what we know. We don't need to wait for more evidence, more data. We know that lead is harmful, and we need to put that science into action and improve our workplace standards.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Dan.
You are just listening to Steve Gilbert, affiliate professor, and Rachel Schaefer, PhD student, in the Department of Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences at the University of Washington School of Public Health. For more information, check on the web at toxopedia.org. Again, that's toxopedia.org. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on kexp.org.